Once again, thanks to everyone who contributed during our spring fundraiser at KUAF. You can take great pride in knowing that you've done your part to keep not just Ozarks at Large and Performance Today on the air, but Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and all of the other programs you listen to. Thanks again from everyone here at Ozarks at Large and KUAF.
Robert Beaufort has always been interested in rocks and minerals. As a graduate student in the Arkansas Center for Space and Planetary Sciences at the University of Arkansas, he studies meteorites and asteroids. When an asteroid exploded over California and Nevada in April of 2012, Beaufort was lucky to come into possession of a fragment. He studied that meteorite and made the discovery that this Sutter's Mill meteorite is one of the most primitive classes of asteroid, 4.56 billion years to be exact. His discovery was so important that it was mentioned in the title of an article written by his consortium and published in the journal Science. An image taken by Beaufort was also published by the New York Times. I spoke with him earlier this year about his discovery. He began by telling me how a geologist came to study space.
Astrogeology, which is very different than astronomy. We have a number of different subdisciplines within the Space and Planetary Science Center. Astrobiologists, astronomers, and so on. Astrogeology is a bit of a specialty. But for somebody that really loves rocks and minerals, there is no more complex rock type on the planet than meteorites. And so you kind of get a little bit of everything that's the most fascinating in that one small package.
Well, and our planet Earth is made up. I mean, you could say, is that also?
Well, you know, you're
astrogeology, yeah.
You're sitting on 6 trillion tons of accumulated meteorite impacts over the last 4.567 billion years. I mean, so literally, this is all a bunch of terrestrialized meteorites. The only thing that sets meteorites apart from the ground that you're standing on is the ground you're standing on has weathered to be unrecognizable in terms of how it preserves the information from the early solar system, whereas a rock that has recently fallen to the surface of the Earth is still preserving the moment of the solar system's formation.
Okay, and so you picked up a rock and a meteorite.
Oh, yes. And I brought a few of them with me. This is a very typical meteorite. This is actually an unclassified Northwest Africa chondrite meteorite found in the Sahara Desert. And it's a typical sort of object from the asteroid belt. It's got a fusion crust on it, which is sort of a melted outer surface. And if you were to cut into the inside of it, you'd see a complex mix of mineral types with a little bit of iron flakes and such. It's basically the raw material from which the solar system was composed.
And so when did this fall from the sky?
Oh, this particular one, within the last few thousand years.
And when somebody found this, how did they know it was a special thing?
Well, depending on where you're looking for meteorites, it can be a lot easier or a lot harder to tell them apart from the surroundings. In Arkansas, we've only ever found 15 meteorites total, and most of those were found in the early 20th century. Three of them are actually extremely famous. The Paragold is one of the largest chondrite meteorites ever found. Another one was found about 3.5 miles from the University of Arkansas campus in Fayetteville, which is pretty neat. Arkansas is not the optimal place to be able to find something and recognize that it came from space. I think 6 out of the 15 were witnessed falls, which is very unusual. In the Sahara Desert, where you have a lot of sand, not many rocks.
Right. Yeah, things stand out.
Yeah, exactly. But half of all of our known meteorites were found in Antarctica with the Antarctic Meteorite Research Program. That's 20,000 out of 40,000 some odd cataloged meteorites were found on the Antarctic ice simply because if you're looking on the Antarctic ice sheet for meteorites, then you're very likely to actually be able to guess right off the bat that any rock you see is going to be from somewhere else.
Is it not under? It's under the ice.
Oh no, with the Antarctic meteorite search programs, the way that the ice sheets move, they butt up against a mountain range, and slowly the ice sublimates off, leaving on the surface of the ice the accumulated volume of meteorite falls from hundreds or thousands of square miles in a relatively small area of sitting right on the top of the ice. So, you know, there it's very easy to find.
Okay.
In Arkansas, not as easy.
So you mentioned that witnessed falls are very rare.
Yes.
And last April, yes. I believe, right? There was a witnessed fall in California.
April 22nd, 2012.
Okay. Which is, this is the meteorite that you published.
Yes. I was one author on that paper.
One author of many authors, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it was a whole consortium.
Yes.
Consorted effort.
Yeah, it was organized by scientists out of the SETI Institute and NASA Ames.
That's something little.
Yes, this is actually a piece of the meteorite that we were researching.
Okay. That is a tiny little piece. And I saw, I was reading about it a little bit and reading the number of pieces that you found and the number, and you know, and how large they were. And my gosh, that's, I mean.
Well, this thing was the size of a Volkswagen when it came into the atmosphere.
Right.
It's several tons, you know. And passing through 100 kilometers of atmosphere, and particularly that lower 30 kilometers where it starts to get dense, I mean, the thing basically burned into tiny little pieces. We've only recovered, I think, to date, about a kilo of it total, about 2.2 pounds. That's a very rough estimate. I haven't seen the current numbers, but those were sent all around the world, and many different scholars at many different institutions applied their particular specialty to answering questions about it because it's a really special meteorite. It is the single most accurate time capsule that we have of the formative moments of the solar system, this particular meteorite class.
So when the solar system was formed?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the solar system history in very brief is 4.56 billion years ago, there was a cloud of hot dust and gas that collapsed. And, you know, 99%+ of that is in the sun and the remainder is in the planets minus a few tiny scraps. Now, the CM class chondrites, this particular type of meteorite among the many meteorites, and it's a fairly rare meteorite type, the CM class chondrites preserve the actual dust from the presolar nebula as minor component in them.
How do you know that they are this old? What are the signs that they are from before our sun?
Well, the dating of presolar grains is actually one of the hardest questions that you could ask and answer. And we do not have very precise dates on presolar grains. However, the dating of things that are subsequent to the formation of our solar system, we look at radionuclides and how they decay over time into other radionuclides and into stable elements. And that rate of decay is constant over time. So you can look at basically what you know an element used to be and what it is now. If they're trapped in a single mineral grain, you compare the two, and it gives you basically a clock.
Okay.
It's kind of like saying, you know, the second hand on a clock moves at a given constant rate. If you know that one clock was started at a particular time and another clock stopped at a particular time, and you look at the distance that the hand moved between those two clocks, you can see how much time has elapsed since the clock stopped.
Stopped, okay.
And the clock stopping is the trapping of those elements in a mineral grain.
Okay.
So it's a bit of a complex science. The short answer is that it's really a matter of teamwork by thousands of scientists over decades of work to be able to put together these chronometers. And they're one of, in my opinion, the foremost accomplishments of humanity in terms of just the poetry and beauty of science in action.
So you're building on what the researchers prior to you,
oh, absolutely.
Their findings, and it's just a constant just...
Each of us as researchers is only a tiny step. You're right. It is a matter of teamwork, both generational and across the broad body of scholars on the planet today. We live on a tiny island of the known in an infinite sea of the unknown, and the work of any given scholar on any given paper is adding a grain of sand to that island of the known. You know, and each of those grains of sand allows the next scholar to peer a little bit farther into the great gulf of the unknown and add their own contribution. And that's kind of the magic of being able to take part in the scientific effort.
Why is it so important?
Oh, in so many different ways. at a practical level, everything else that we will ever set foot on in the solar system is going to be understood in terms of what we find in the record of meteorites and meteorite impact structures. on Earth, we have a complex environment, a complex atmosphere, moving plates, plate tectonics, continents drifting around, volcanoes, and so on and so forth. Most of the rest of the solar system is dry, dead, barren, very little liquid water, basically no liquid water, and static rocks, rocks that have been frozen since billions of years ago. All of the places that we can actually get to and ever do anything in the future of humanity are cold and dry and are defined materially by the kinds of rocks and minerals that we find in meteorites.
So this particular meteorite, did we know that it was coming?
Yeah, and that's actually one of the coolest things about it. The recovery of this meteorite starts a new era in the history of meteorite recovery because it was tracked on weather radar as it was coming in, but we didn't know it at the time. When people called in the fact that they had seen this brilliant bolide in the sky, this bright meteor.
Are we talking average people, just civilians?
Civilians, everyday people called in and said, I saw this giant, huge flash of light moving across the sky. It broke into pieces and so on. And this was across two states, very large event, Nevada and California. The scientists went back, looked in the weather radar records, and found the weather radar traces of it and located where it ended on the ground, actually traced it as it came across to the land.
So the point where it exploded in the atmosphere.
Yes, pinpointed where it exploded in the atmosphere, followed the particles down through the atmosphere and traced them to the ground, and then they went there and picked them up off the ground.
And so it's called the Sutter's Mill meteorite because of that location where where these pieces were found. How large was this area?
Well, it encompasses, I believe, the town of Sutter's Mill all the way out to the Sutter's Mill. Was it State Park? And
so it could have been like, I don't know how large this place is compared to Fayetteville, but, you know, my home out on the east side of Fayetteville, I could have found a piece there. And then here, 7 miles away from my home, could have been a piece here as well.
For a large meteorite fall or for a fall that breaks up high in the atmosphere, that's a pretty typical dimension for a strewn field. You can have a strewn field, we call them strewn fields, the area that is dispersed on the ground. That's a pretty typical dimension for a strewn field. It can be 5, 10, 15 miles long and several miles wide.
So you did your research on this tiny little piece?
This piece that I'm holding in my hand was one of the ones that I had under the scanning electron microscope at the University of Arkansas to understand aspects of the fusion crust and some not yet published work, but this was one of the pieces that I used to do the work that I contributed to the paper as well.
Okay. Well, that's kind of awesome that you were able to, it's very small. I don't know. Kind of looks like I had a splinter in my foot a couple weeks ago.
Well, it looks like a tiny fragment of a charcoal briquette.
I know, yeah.
I showed it to some friends of mine when I brought it home in order to look at it under a microscope and take some pictures. And they commented, it looks like a charcoal briquette, and it's possibly the most boring rock I've ever seen. I told them, this is the most interesting rock you've ever seen. Here's why. This is the dawn of the solar system.
Right. So. But I mean, it could easily get mixed in with, our streets have some gravel and stuff on the sides. It could very easily get just mixed in and lost with that.
Unfortunately, the CM and CI chondrite groups, which are some of the most important, most fascinating of all the meteorites, those that have all the goodies, are some of the most bland-looking materials. They look like a charcoal briquette. Mm-hmm. And they break apart on the Earth's surface very quickly. They're fragile. They don't weather well. Water will tear them apart. I mean, they look like dirt, and they're...
So are we missing things?
Yeah, we're missing a tremendous percentage of the meteorites that are on the ground. Like I said, we've only recovered 15 in the entire history of Arkansas. You know, that's... there are in arid, intense, optimal collection areas, there are places where we've recovered 15 meteorites in a square mile. So it's a little unfortunate, but there's no way around it. You know, we do the best we can, and unfortunately, these things don't last very long on the ground. You know, once they're on the ground, especially in a wet climate like here, you know, they rust away to nothing.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Beaufort.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to y'all.
Yep.
Robert Beaufort is a graduate student at the University of Arkansas in the Arkansas Center for Space and Planetary Sciences. I spoke with him earlier this year.